One Split Second, written by Caroline Bond and read by Deshaun Phillips. The message went out to all staff at the beginning of the day. It was read and passed on over and over again. Conversations were had about who could be spared and who could not. Far more wanted to attend than were able, but that was the way it was, even for this. Many of the frontline staff knew immediately that they wouldn't be able to go. Their presence was required elsewhere. When your day job is a matter of life or death, the living take precedence. A number of people were secretly relieved to be denied permission. It felt wrong not to want to be there and wrong to be thankful to miss it. The corridor vigil was a St. Thomas's tradition that had started with Lenny Okafor. 19 years of age, cause of death, inoperable internal bleeding caused by falling from a roof. The firm that employed Lenny was eventually prosecuted for its poor health and safety procedures, but that provided little solace to Lenny's family. Lenny's dad, Vincent, who was a porter at the hospital at the time of the accident, was thankfully not on duty the day his son was brought into A&E. In fact, Vincent would never work as a porter again, not in St. Thomas's or anywhere else. He said he simply couldn't face doing the job anymore, not after what happened. The honor guard for Lenny was a spontaneous gesture of support organized by Vincent's workmates. It felt like the least they could do to show their respects to the family and the brave decision they had made. There were probably about 20 people there for that very first act of observance, most of them porters. They stood in clumps of twos and threes ranged along the corridor, uncertain of the protocol, which was understandable, because there wasn't any. Robbed of their usual banter, their feet still and their hands idle for a change, Vincent's workmates shuffled and whispered quietly until the doors of the ICU banged open and Vincent, the bloke with the loudest laugh and the worst jokes, wheeled his firstborn out on his last ever journey. As the gurney passed along the corridor, the porters bowed their heads in absolute silence. Now, the attendees for the vigils came from every walk of life and level within the hospital. An untimely death touched all the staff, irrespective of their clinical and professional experience. They were all mothers and fathers, brothers and sisters, friends and lovers, all capable of contemplating the unimaginable and humble enough to pay witness to it. Indeed, the corridor ritual for the organ donation patients and their families had become a touchstone in the lives of many of them, a way, not that anyone ever voiced it, of warding away the furies from their own precious, all too fragile loved ones. By 10:36 a.m. on Wednesday, 3rd of April, more than 200 people gathered in the corridor on Level B. Clerks, porters, nurses, cleaners, quite a few of the junior doctors, a smattering of consultants, and even a few members of the general public who happened to be there and who bravely chose to stay and participate. Many of the faces were familiar. Rivals, adversaries, subordinates and bosses. They whispered to each other or stood apart in quiet contemplation just as the porters had done for Lenny. At 10:37 a.m., two of the ICU nurses came out of the ward and held open the doors. That was the signal. The gathered crowd, which had been subdued before, now fell silent. The wait lasted only a matter of seconds, but it felt as it always did, much longer. Those nearest the door heard it first, the mechanical sound of the life support machine. The trolley emerged slowly, flanked by the attendant staff and the patient's relatives. In a wordless ripple, the attendees along the corridor bowed their heads. They did so to pay their respects, but also to avoid looking into the eyes of the grieving family.